searching for answers, wandering in the dark, looking for that glimmer of light that resonates with your soul and spirit. As you step into this new era that some indigenous people refer to as the Rainbow Bridge, without a compass, without a guide, yet needing some help to navigate your way through this spiritual maze, look no further. We've got the map, the Searcher's Roadmap. Now here's your host for the Searcher's Roadmap, Rhonda Harris.
Hello, listeners. This is Rhonda Harrison, broadcasting live from Red Feather Lake, Colorado, on the Searcher's Roadmap. Today, our guest is Catherine White, and she has always loved gardening and always had a large garden, both flowers and vegetables. Before she retired, she had begun to research medicinal plants and had planted several in her yard. After retirement, she began her studies in earnest. She has studied several years with Beverly McFarland, a local herbalist who teaches here on her mountain in the Albuquerque area, about how to identify and use as medicine the plants that grow locally. She's received certificates for her apprenticeship program. She's also received a certificate from Dr. Toronto Low Dogs Program, Foundations in Herbal Medicine. She studied with Rosemary Gladstar and twice gone for a week-long program of herbal and spiritual studies at Cuernavaca, Mexico, the CEDEHC. And she considered herself an herbalist and a continuing student of herbal medicine. She grows many of the plants that she uses in her medicines. She feels a personal relationship with her garden, and these plants enhances the power of the medicine. She gave many presentations on medicinal herbs and medicine making. She's an elder in the Kalapali Tokali Olin and has been with Maestro Lara for 7 years, both as an apprentice and a healer. A Kalapali is a community, in this case, of healers who work in the traditional style of Mexico. She leads ceremonies and rituals, does spiritual cleansings, platas, heart-to-heart talks, herbal consultations, and facilitates the Tazmacal, the Mexican-style sweat lodge. She's also a Reiki practitioner. And with that, I'm going to bring Catherine into the studio. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Rhonda.
Breathe. You're okay.
Yes.
I know that feeling. Oh, my gosh. Why did I do this? Welcome, and we're going to cover joy today. So I'm hoping that we get some callers to call in, and if callers want to call in, they can call in at 1-347-838-9142 and press 1 once, and I'll bring you into the studio. But, you know, let's look at, you know, what does joy mean, and how did you actually get started with the Kalapali Tokali? Man, my tongue is twisting.
Yeah. Well, I got connected to the Kalapali through my herbal studies, and they were looking for someone to participate in some of their healing fairs that they make available to the public, and they were looking for an herbalist, and I sort of connected with them that way and began studying more in depth their tradition and their culture. And I think joy is a component of any spiritual path, or in my belief, and again, most of what I say today is my own thoughts, my own beliefs. I can't say that I've read it anywhere or you know, anybody told me this, except for a few specific things here that I'm going to share. But I feel that joy should be a part of any spiritual path that people follow. I wanted to talk about it today because it seems like in today's world, American culture, maybe specifically, there are all kinds of emotions that people feel, like stress, overwork, fear, anxiety, sensory overload with all of the electronic stuff, the Facebook and the Twitter and the computer and the TV and the digital this, that, and the next thing. And there seems to be a lot of guilt as well in what we've done in the past, what we might not be doing right. I think a lot of people feel that they don't deserve to feel joyful. And if you ask people, how are you today? How many people say, I feel joyful today?
Yeah.
Have a good day. How many people actually ever feel joy? You don't hear about it. People don't talk about it. It's not like something that's out there. And I thought,
yeah, you hear about the stress and all the negative stuff.
Yeah,
but not
all
the
negative stuff, right.
Right.
Since last Sunday was the summer solstice, which marks the beginning of the summer season, I thought I would talk about joy because joy is the emotion of this time of year. It is a time of joyful celebration and of abundance. Many of the herbs connected to the summer solstice are also mood-elevating herbs like chamomile, St. John's wort, lavender, and rose. Those things are all uplifting. And this is a time when the natural world is just in full bloom and there's, you know, a riot of color and birdsong and everything is so fertile and promising and we have the potential for, you know, a bountiful harvest, that this is a time when we should be experiencing joy. So that's how I came to choose today's topic of joy.
And I think it's important because, I mean, we don't talk about it. It's not like you hear about being in the middle of the earth, you know, or on the planet.
Right.
You know, you hear about all the bad stuff and all the bad things. You know, it just is amazing how that works.
Right. And I think people feel like, well, look at how many horrible things are happening in the world. Why should I be joyful? Why should I find a reason to be joyful when all these people are suffering? But my feeling is that when we experience joy, that sends forth a positive vibration into the universe. Every positive emotion that we feel puts that energy out into the universe. And it's like we are being uplifters. We are being the support for all those people who are in a position right now of not feeling joyful because of their circumstances.
Right.
And that's not to say that even in the worst of situations that people can't feel joy. I think it depends. We have to first talk about, like, what is joy. The dictionary definition says it is bliss or ecstasy, an intensity of feeling. And it, I think intensity is the important word because...
Yes.
People talk about moments of pure joy, and they're implying that this is not, that this intensity can't be sustained. Nobody, unless they're taking advantage of unhealthy or illegal substances, will walk around feeling the intensity of joy every moment of their life. That can't be sustained. But I think we need to find a way to find our source of joy so that it becomes more possible on a daily basis. I don't know. Do you think there's a difference between happiness and joy?
I think if it's more excitable or more intense than happiness, maybe, because happiness we feel fleetingly at times. I think a lot of it is this is such a work-based world and stress-related world. and to be detached from any type of emotion, you know, that it's hard for people to know what it is they're feeling, you know. And I think that with happiness, it's kind of an octave below joy, where it's just, you know, and joy is one of those pinnacle times where, you know, you say, oh, I found it, or I've, you know, mm-hmm. like last night, my 80-year-old mother said, I think I finally found that secret place of silence.
Wow.
And she was so happy that she had found it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she said, and it's very
yeah.
nice and calm there. You know, and joy tends to be
mm-hmm.
calm. It's not a,
yeah.
it doesn't raise your adrenaline, but it raises your mood and the way you look at things and your outlook on things.
Mm-hmm. And to me, happiness is often impacted by other people or outside situations. Somebody
mm-hmm.
does something or a thing happens, and you say, oh, that makes me happy. But that situation or that person or whatever the event was is not going to be continually happening. And if your happiness is connected to that, then, of course, you're not going to be feeling the happiness all the time. Whereas joy is, I think, comes from a deeper place inside of us, that
mm-hmm.
regardless of what's happening to us on the outside, it's in there someplace. And it, it's subdued or temporarily suppressed by certain events like grief or sadness at loss or all the other things that happen. But if we have cultivated joy, if we have worked at it, it continues to exist deep inside us and will come to the surface again and again.
Mm-hmm.
Much easier than if we haven't really thought about it or if we've waited for it to happen to us.
Right, rather than taking the bull by the horns, so to speak, and
mm-hmm.
You know, and making the experience happen. Or, I mean, I find a lot of my joy time is when I'm in nature and when I'm out in the garden or out hiking in nature.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I asked several people where they found their joy in preparing to, you know, for this talk today. And I asked friends, many wise women that are comadres, some of my teachers, and nature seems to come to the top. And that seems to be the first thing people have said, you know, just being, a sense of being by the ocean with my feet in the sand, watching the sunrise, listening to the waves come in, or
mm-hmm.
hiking on the mountain, watching the birds or the animals or the plants, just being up on the mountain in the forest. Another person who is a great gardener said, just being able to follow the cycles of the seasons.
Mm-hmm.
She mentioned that she had a Brazilian teacher who said, nature is our Bible. We can learn all the lessons we need from nature. It shows us the way and it shows us the path if we study nature. So I think nature and the natural world is, you know, a main source of joy for many people. And I think that's part of why joy is not predominant in today's world, because I think too many people have lost touch with the natural world. Everything is
mm-hmm.
inside buildings, inside our apartment buildings with underground parking. I mean, nobody ever actually has to go outside
mm-hmm.
for anything.
That's true.
In a lot of cases, you know, especially where we have denser populations in the large urban centers and so on. It's
mm-hmm.
it's really difficult to find that connection to nature.
Well, yeah, and you just don't know where you're going to find it or how you're going to find it. Or, you know,
I saw a really interesting ad, and they were in a magazine that I was looking at recently, and it's promoting a workshop or a series of workshops called forest bathing, as like sunbathing, only it's like it's having to reteach people how to go out and find connection to the natural world, because we seem to have lost that as a culture, that connection to the natural world.
Oh, I talk about the way that I interact with nature and stuff and how it changes things, because you're just like, oh, this is really different, you know. And I think a lot of it is learning to ride that wave, that it does come back periodically and seasonally and momentarily, you know. And I think we're also used to getting what we want when we want it instantaneously, that, you know, when it just shows up and you haven't put a lot of task into it, especially if you're out hiking, you know, you're not saying, oh, I'm going to go out here and hike so I can feel joy today. You know, you're going out there to enjoy nature. But what happens is you do find joy there because it's so quiet and blissful. And I think the ions are different in nature.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I think nature also teaches us to slow down and to become more observant and aware, to cultivate patience, because the tree is only going to grow so fast. If you're in the garden, and for me, my garden is an area where I really connect to nature, and I can work the dirt, the soil, and I can add things to it that will make it richer, and I can plant the seeds and I can water them and I can go over there and bless them and look at them 3 times a day, but I can't make them grow any faster.
No.
And actually, I don't make them do anything. I can nurture them and encourage them and protect them, but I'm not making it grow. The essence of growth is within the seed, and I just have to wait until it's ready for it to happen. So I think gardening is a great teacher of patience.
Oh, yeah.
And the lesson of things happening in an ordered time. Things unfold in nature according to the plan of nature. And we can do stuff and alter it, but it's not going to be nature anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Which is getting on to a whole nother topic.
Oh, yeah.
But,
just like,
you know.
But joy is one of those things that if you're shamed a lot or told you're not good enough or that, you know, you don't feel like you fit in, you don't think you do deserve, you know, joy. I mean, people think that it's unattainable, when actually it's easy to attain if you can be in nature and enjoy, you know, the trees and the grass and, you know, the sky and all of that, and see the grandeur of it, you know, versus, you know. And I think that's what
absolutely makes it. Absolutely. And that's one of the things, pardon, I didn't let you finish, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's fine. Go on ahead.
One of the things I wanted to, that seems important to me, is that joy, especially if you're just starting out to think about joy, if you've never really, or don't think you've felt it before or know what joy is, but it doesn't just get dropped on our head by the universe and suddenly we're joyful. Or maybe it does and we are just not aware that that's what joy is. But it seems to me something like many other things in life, is that you have to work at it a little bit. You have to sometimes make an effort to find your joy and to cultivate, because it takes an effort to go out and be in nature, to hike on the mountain or walk on the beach or go to the park or dig in the garden. That all takes some kind of effort. And that wouldn't necessarily be everybody's joy either, you know. But I think joy is like an underground spring. And once we find it and tap into it and develop it and foster it, it continues to exist in us even during those time periods when other emotions are uppermost because of other circumstances. It stays in there, and it will bubble up again and again once we've discovered it. And like I said, nature does it for a lot of people, but maybe not everybody. Some of the other answers I got in response to that question was relationship and connectedness. in some ways on a personal, intimate level with a partner or a spouse or with one's children or grandchildren. I think that can bring a significant sense of joy. But also in community. And I don't mean how many friends you have on Facebook. I mean, a person-to-person community where you're interacting with other human beings in the same space. And I think if you find like-minded people that are involved in a shared activity, you can find a sense of joy in that. Even if you're not friends with these people outside of that circle or have a relationship with them, I know one of the things that gives me a very strong feeling of joy every time is standing in circle with the other members of the Kalpuli as we begin mm-hmm. ceremony, as we honor the four directions. And, you know, those people, they're not going to be my best friend, and some of them I don't have a relationship with outside of that circle. But we all have the same intention. We are all walking in the same direction on this path, and that is such a feeling of profound joy for me to be in a circle. I mean, I'm getting goosebumps now just describing it to
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
It is such a strong
feeling.
And the
power is in that circle, because, like, mm-hmm. I did a solstice ceremony on Sunday, and there was a group of us, and you could feel the, as each person showed up, you know, and that type of thing, it grew and grew and grew, and it was a blissful, joyful moment, you know, to realize that I was back on the land and, mm-hmm. you know, and that I did have support from the community, and the community, excuse me, had my support.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
and
that interacted, that connectedness to other people with that are like-minded. And it doesn't have to be even on a spiritual, an obviously spiritual plane like a solstice celebration or in my community. It can be a dance group. It can be mm-hmm. a choir. It can be a book club
right.
where people are reading and sharing ideas. And you don't have to make them all your best friends, but in that moment of sharing intellectually or whatever you're reading in the book or raising your voices together to make a unified song, all those can be moments of joy.
Yeah.
So, it can...
Amazing.
Yeah. And I think we've kind of lost that personal connection because we have so many, I don't know what the word is, things like Facebook and Twitter and all those
mm-hmm.
Other ways that make us feel like we're connected to people. It's not the same as sharing an activity on a personal level with, you know, with the other person there. You can see a facial expression. You can look in their eyes. You can hear their voice with your ear.
Mm-hmm.
You can shake their hand or hold their hand or hug them. It raises the vibrational level of each human being that's involved in that circle until it reaches a point of joy. And that's something that can't be done electronically, I don't think.
No. Because that's
and
going
other...
more outside yourself.
Mm-hmm. Right. One of the other the third thing that came up when I was asking the question about where you find your joy is in creativity and or achievement, accomplishing
mm-hmm.
something worthwhile, creativity in terms of, you know, whether you're creating a flower arrangement or having a dinner party, and you have everything just absolutely perfect, or creating a piece of artwork or a piece of music, or
mm-hmm.
sewing, you know, a piece of clothing. All those are creative acts that give a person a sense of achievement, of doing something worthwhile. And I think the key there is to do things.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the fingers on the keyboard or on the digital remote. I think people actually have to get up and do things. And I think partly because our society puts so much value on work and people are at work so much of their life and stressed out that they feel like they may not have the energy to do anything once they get home from work. But actually, doing something creative is actually energizing. It uses different parts of our brain, and I think many people find their moments of joy in achieving something that they've created that they don't find in their workday life.
Exactly. You know, and I think too that creating things is another way of finding your inner joy or your inner bliss.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is in doing art and seeing building it and then seeing the final product.
Right. Even in when I'm in my studio and I do art of different kinds. A lot of it is collage or mixed media stuff, but even the doing of it, as I'm moving through the piece and a thing falls into place and it's just perfect, and I just leap up and grin, you know, it's perfect, it's there, it's like wonderful, it's a moment of just pure joy. And as I keep, even the process can be, there can be moments of joy in the process, much less in the finished product, which very often produces moments of joy.
Yes. And even like with making essences and tinctures and that type of thing too, and hydrosols, I mean, you still have that elation. And I think it's because of the chemical change that happens when you're working with plants or walking in nature and barefoot or, you know, in the grass, you're getting a certain chemical feedback, you know, into our bodies that we don't have anymore because we all wear clothes, shoes, and socks and stuff where, you know, it used to be that walked on the land barefoot more so than they do now.
Absolutely. So those areas seem to be the ones that provide moments of pure joy for the, I mean, you know, I just had a very small sampling of people. It would be interesting to know where other people find their joy. If anyone calls in, that would be great.
Yeah.
To share that idea, where do you find your joy? But maybe we should talk a little bit about
the different
how you can, what are some steps that you can take to work toward joy? Especially for those people that feel that it's unattainable in their lives and that they'll never find joy. And again, we talked about having to work at it, having to go in search of it. But once you've found it, once you cultivate your joy by doing things that produce that joy, it's like it comes easier. It happens more often. And I think one of the first things that I would like to say is that you have to take good care of yourself. Your body, first of all, what you put into it, what kinds of things you eat and drink, and also your mind, what kind of stuff you're watching and listening to and reading and thinking about. Energy in the form of emotion that we put out attracts like energy. So if we are putting out negative thoughts and feelings, that's what we're going to pull in more often. So we have to be, one of the definitions that I found in an old dictionary of joy included mental and moral health, which I think just, you know, it's really difficult to feel joy when our body feels sluggish. Our digestion is sluggish. We have no energy. You know very well when you have a cold or the flu, you're not inclined to feel joy at that moment, but we know that's a temporary situation. And I think in general, if we work to take good care of ourselves and keep ourselves healthy and our minds positive, we open the door for joy much wider.
Yes.
Even people with chronic illnesses, they can take the best care of themselves that they can. And they can, just because they have a chronic illness doesn't eliminate the potential for joy. My father had multiple sclerosis, and he was confined to a wheelchair in the last several months of his life, and he was dying of lung cancer. And he sat on the patio, and he would watch the birds, and he would get just so thrilled, so joyful by watching the different habits of the birds, and they're coming and they're going. He found joy in such small things on an everyday basis, right up until the last minute of his life, that I think he was a really good example of how you can find joy even in what seems like very dire circumstances.
Mm-hmm. And I find for myself, I mean, the last 2 weeks I've been in the mountains where I've had no cable and very little radio, you know, interaction and stuff. So it's been just me and nature and, you know, the divine and great spirit. And I'm just not, it's like, I was happier there than I was once I got back into town and could have all the amenities of town. And then it was like, huh, maybe I don't need that as much, you know?
Right. I think that's probably, after taking care of ourselves and making making sure our body and mind are strong and healthy, I think finding stillness and contemplation in order to make room
exactly.
for joy. Some people keep their mind so busy with all these other
yeah.
things constantly going, and their body so busy that they wouldn't know joy if it did fall out of the sky and hit them, you know.
Exactly.
You have to make room for it in your life.
Exactly.
A little quietness. Yeah.
Lots of quietness sometimes. And,
yeah,
and
sometimes
just
a lot of
plugging
quiet.
From all the electronics,
mm-hmm.
you know, anymore seems to help a lot because it doesn't have all that, I don't know what you'd call it, all that energy that comes across the screens and everything where you go, why am I doing this? You know, but
right.
can you tell listeners how to get a hold of you if they'd like to get a hold of you in regards to diagnosing and taking care of different ailments that they could have, that they might have?
Sure. Sure. I will give you my email address, which is unusual. It's bonewomanspeaks, BoneWomanSpeaks. SPEAKS at MSN.com.
Okay. And can you tell people what type of ailments or disabilities that you work with that people could look for your services to have help with?
Well, some of the things that I run into most often, first of all, is stress, insomnia. I guess that's probably the most common thing, stress and insomnia,
mm-hmm.
anxiety, tension headaches. And then after that is frequently digestive problems.
Mm-hmm.
And then people, I think a broad category would be building the immune system, you know, or what
mm-hmm.
to do, like if I'm getting a cold or I'm getting the flu or I have a scratchy sore throat, what can I do? Not just to relieve the symptom, but to build up the immune system. And those are areas that I've worked with most commonly,
because that seems to be what most people are suffering from.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of other things, of course. I have a protocol of different things, including vitamins and minerals and herbs that I use for people that are getting chemotherapy for cancer,
mm-hmm.
and you know, other things like that. But the most common ones are the stress, insomnia, and the digestive, and then the basic immune system.
Yeah. And do you do, what do I want to call, the Curanderismo class at the University of New Mexico, do you do the herbal walks there?
Yes, I am doing one in connection with several other local herbalists. We're leading, we're taking groups of students through the biopark, the botanical gardens,
yeah,
and looking at what they have growing there that is medicinal. And I also do a class here in my yard, which I have a handout on the herbs that I grow in my backyard. I have about 50 herbs just in the backyard, and what they do and what they're for, and then you can see what they look like. And then I also include medicine making on tinctures and salves. And that class is that is an extra class. It's a I guess they call it a breakout workshop that's not included in the regular tuition for the class. And that will
mm-hmm.
be held on Friday, the 17th of July at 1:15.
Oh, so it's coming up real soon.
Yes.
In the next couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice. And they can get a hold of you in regards to registering for those classes, or do they have to go through the university?
The class that I teach, that is the breakout workshop that's here in my yard, they can get in contact with me. Otherwise, but if they want to take advantage of the other classes involved in the whole two-week course, they need to contact the university, and they can just Google Curanderismo at unm.edu.
Nice. And then I know that you do different healings with herbs. Are they like plasters or, you know, like mustard plasters like they used to use in the olden days for lung ailments and that type of stuff, or poultices, or?
Depending on what the situation is, yes. Herbs can be used as poultices or compresses, in which you don't use the actual plant material, but you use a tea from the plant
mm-hmm.
and put it on the cloth. I use that more often, although occasionally compresses are called for. There's also baths. Plants are used in a multitude of different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Both for physical and for spiritual healing.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, if I can do a little plug here for a symposium I'm going to speak at.
Sure, that'd be great.
Can I do that? Okay.
Yeah.
The end of July, July 31st through August 2nd, in Portland, Oregon, there's going to be a symposium on the more esoteric or spiritual use of herbs. It's called Viridis Genii, and that is Viridis Genii, two words. And you can Google that and come up and find their website. And or if you're on Facebook, you can also go to the Facebook thing. And another Kalpuli member and I will be presenting there on doing spiritual cleansings, the limpias, or energetic cleansings, using plants. And we're also going to do a simulated Temescal or traditional Mexican sweat lodge.
Nice. And you use some of your own herbs in those as well, right, in the tusks?
Yes.
In the tusks?
Yes.
Also.
And, yes, definitely.
And if they're doing something like that, what type of clothing should they bring with them to be able to participate?
Well, something comfortable. Now, if it was a real one in which we're actually creating, you know, a lot of steam,
right,
which, you know, happens in the sweat lodge, they would want to wear something loose. In the Mexican tradition or Aztec tradition, they you go nude into the sweat lodge.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in a couple of them in Mexico, and even in community lodges in which you have men and women mixed, you still go nude. And that's, you know, nobody has an issue with that. In this country, we have more issues around our sexuality,
mm-hmm,
and our bodies. And so in order to make everyone comfortable, people wear like shorts and tank tops or bathing suits, or, you know, the guys wear swim trunks, or you can wear a sarong.
Uh-huh.
And then once you're inside and the doors are closed, the lights are off, it's so dark you can't see your own hand in front of your face. And then if you want to, people undo their sarongs or take off their,
mm-hmm,
shirts or whatever. And then we give a warning before we turn the lights back on so that everyone can cover themselves, not just for their own sake, but for everyone else's sake who may be not comfortable with seeing nudity.
Right.
But basically,
and
something loose and something, because it will get very wet with perspiration. So you want to wear something that's kind of lightweight, and like bathing suits are always good.
Yeah. And then trying to think, I had another question, but now I can't remember what it was. It was like it just fleeted right out of my head. I was like, where did that go to? I know what I was going to ask you is, there's a natural way to repel insects, right? I mean, with like,
yes,
lemongrass.
There are actually several plants that will repel insects. Basil is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that has strong volatile oils in it, that has a real strong, strong scent, but if you take basil leaves and rub it on, that will repel, like, mosquitoes and insects. And I also make a spray-on insect repellent by using essential oils and a mixture of distilled water, you know, half and half distilled water and alcohol.
Right.
And then add the essential oils to that, and you can make a spray-on.
Oh, nice.
A spray-on insect repellent. And let's see. Some of the ones I've used have been citronella, I know, lavender, rosemary, I think, cedarwood. And you just put, you know, a few drops until you can smell it when you spray it on your skin,
mm-hmm,
and then you can use that to repel insects.
Nice, and then they don't have to have all the chemicals that are in the other stuff,
right,
that isn't,
right,
so good,
right,
for us.
Absolutely.
You know, you're just a wealth of information, and we're almost out of time here. Would you like to share anything else about things you're going to be doing in the future, or workshops that you're working on now that people could,
well,
participate in?
Tomorrow I'm teaching a class on medicine making on teas and tinctures, and that's going to be at Sanjeevani Healing Center. And that's at 10 to 12. And then in August, I will be doing one at the same location on making salves. and that will be on the 15th of August.
Okay.
And I have done 3 workshops so far this spring at that same place. And I'm considering repeating the series in the fall in an evening, because there are some people that would like to attend that are committed on Saturday mornings and they can't. They can't do it. I can give you the phone number for that place if you think that will
if you would,
be good.
Please.
Okay. Area 505-821-6300. And that's Sanjeevani, it's an Ayurvedic Healing Center. It's spelled S-A-N-J-E-V-A-N-I, Sanjeevani.
Very nice. Can you think of anything else? You've already talked about the University of New Mexico's Cordero workshops that you'll be doing and your walkout ones that you do in your property.
Right.
Do you have, you know, and you tell the listeners again how to reach you by email in case if they didn't hear it. And
okay, I will repeat the email address again. And then if it seems to me like I have more in-depth questions, if they have a question, if I need to do a more in-depth interview with them regarding a specific condition they want treated, then I will give them my phone number and they can call me. But we'll start with the email address, which is bonewomanspeaks@msn.com. That is bonewomanspeaks@msn.com.
Very nice. And listeners, you can reach me at the Searchers Roadmap at gmail.com, searchersroadmap.com. And we'll be having future guests that continue to work in the Cordero-ism beliefs. And then, you know, we'll be having other numerologists and things on the air in the next few weeks, and there are shows on Thursday and Friday. It's Roadmap for Seekers on Thursday at 11 a.m. Daylight Savings Time, and then at noon Daylight Savings Time on Friday is the Searchers Roadmap. If you have any requests for any certain type of healer, reader, energy worker, you know, just let me know, and I can, or if you are an energy worker or healer and you would like to be interviewed, just reach me at the Searchers Roadmap at gmail.com, or you can reach me on Facebook at Rhonda Harrison. That's what I go under. And then Ceremony and Healing for the Individual and the Land, and Shawls of Love and Hugs on the Facebook pages. I'm also available there. And I just want to let the listeners know also that if they want to re-listen to this, they can download this show in the archives about 10 minutes after the show, and you can pass it on to other friends and other people that you would like to have involved in this type of medicine. And with that, Catherine, do you have anything else for the listeners? Anything you feel like we haven't touched on?
I guess the only thing that I would like to say is that the more often you feel joy, first of all, I think it leads to a longer, fuller, more rich life. And so I encourage everyone to seek out their joy. And I want to thank all those people that contributed to this by me asking them questions, Beverly and Anna, Cece and Catherine and Jim and Sean, all those people. Because the roadmap isn't made by one person. We all contribute to the wisdom, and we all need to share our wisdom, our thoughts, our feelings,
exactly,
and encourage each other along the way.
And we don't have to focus on the negative all the time. It's okay to focus on the positive
and find what
Absolutely.
You find your joy and your bliss at, you know, because until you stop feeding the negative, you don't know what the positive can do, you know, and in our society, we tend to look at the negative before we look at the positive. So try to reverse that in your belief system. It'll help a lot. You know, read up on joy, check things out, you know. And one of the things that I've always been told is that the hummingbird takes the pain out of the heart and brings the joy into the heart by its movements, and that it can move in all four directions, and that it, you know, pollinates all the different flowers. I mean, imagine being a hummingbird going from flower to flower and being very blissful all day, you know, just pollinating everything and feeding, you know, themselves so that they can move around so fast. And, you know, and I think about that and it brings a smile to my face, because hummingbirds are exactly blissful. I mean, they're there 1 minute and they're gone the next, and they're really quick, you know, and you just have to start writing down those moments that you are feeling those feelings, and maybe keep track of them for a month and see how many times you did feel it and or got close to it. And what were you doing and where were you at, so that you can reinvent it in your life on a daily basis, so that you can lower your blood pressure. And with that, I will bid you all adieu. Thank you very much, Catherine, for the interview today. It was beautiful and wonderful. We'll have to have you back in the fall when we look at, you know, the abundance of harvest that we go through in the fall getting ready for winter.
Okay, we can do that. Yes, I would enjoy that very much.
Yes,
okay,
and have
you.
A wonderful week, everyone, and make it a great day. I'll talk to you later. Have a great day.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.